So then, preaching and teaching. Well, preacher, I don't know how it is in Holland or in your own countries, but in England, the word preacher is often used in a bad way, as in the expression, the Muslim preacher of hate. There's one famous preacher in England, and he fought in Afghanistan with the Taliban, and then he came to England to preach Islam. But along with his preaching, he was preaching hatred for the British. And leaving aside the fact that sometimes Britain and British people behave in a way that is annoying, but leaving aside that fact, he became known as the preacher of hate. So it seems that juxtaposing these two words is for extra effect, because what does a preacher normally preach? Normally preaches love. You know, a preacher is normally preaching love. But sometimes you can preach against the people who do not love, and you become a preacher of hate. You stir up feelings against other people instead of for God. This is not helpful. So two things here. A preacher having the wrong effect on people by preaching not love but animosity or some political message. But that's not really a preacher, because you're not exhorting a person to a higher level of conduct. You're exhorting them to a lower level of conduct. So preaching begins by helping to convince people to live better lives and enjoy long-term happiness. And it ends, A, when you're doing it for yourself, and B, when you're doing it for any other message apart from moral betterment or religious development. Is that all right? Prabhupada said that his guru's definition of a preacher, preaching, was to see a small spark of Krishna consciousness within someone's heart and to speak in such a way as to fan it into a flame. So it helps as a preacher if you do actually see the good side of people, that you do actually see the spark of Krishna bhakti in someone's heart, and you do speak in such a way that they will develop that. That's the first thing, to see the good in a person. Because there is always bad. There is always bad. Someone just recently wrote a letter. Someone who's very, anyway, I won't get into it. He reserved some very unkind words for me. But I think that you can choose to see the bad in others, and you can choose to see the good in others. And as a preacher, you've got to see the good in others. Try to fan that into a flame. Now, as a preacher, we're also talking about helping a person. So when we try to help a person, we have Krishna's example of preaching to Arjuna. And Krishna's preaching to Arjuna begins with a rebuke. It begins with a correction. No sooner has Arjuna said, "I'm your disciple, please preach to me, you're my guru," then Krishna says, "All right, you're a fool. You're a fool. You're lamenting for that which is not worthy of grief." So he immediately criticizes him. Arjuna has entered into a contract with Krishna. He has asked Krishna to be his guru. Preaching doesn't necessarily mean that that a person enters into a contract with you that you will be their guru. When a person enters into that contract with you and is fully aware that part of the contract is that you will correct them, then and only then can you correct them. Until that point, you've got to find the good in them. After that point, when they know what they're letting themselves in for, you may find the good in them once, twice, three times, four times, five times. And then the sixth time, you'll find something wrong. And then don't do it again. Because if you're always finding something wrong with someone, it's too much. You have to find something right. So just a few things on preaching. Preaching means also that we do have a siddhanta. We are not preachers in our own right, actually. All we are is sabhyasachin. We're instruments, not just for Krishna, but we're instruments for the acharya. And we go preaching with a message, not of our own, but a message that's been given with us. Prabhupada often said that his success in preaching was just because he was a postman. He was just a messenger. He didn't add anything, he didn't take anything away, but he's a faithful representative of the teachings of his guru. And that gives you strength. Preacher is also someone who's convinced, someone who's purely representing. Although this may be a bit of a problem for people, because when someone was thinking, well, Prabhupada, we have devotees who've been in the temple for 4 days and they go out preaching. They hardly know anything, they're not really convinced. Shouldn't we wait until we're pure before we preach? And that's a good question, isn't it? I'll preach when I'm advanced. When I'm advanced, I'll take up that responsibility. And when I'm pure, then I'll be able to preach effectively. And Prabhupada laughed. He said, if you wait until you are pure, he said, that day will never come. He said, but preach, and then you will become pure. Very controversial question, and I say that during these 3 days, I will not flinch from any controversial question. It's not really a controversial question, but people have made it so because they have so many disagreements. But my question to you now is, Ram, what is ISKCON? I notice that everybody's taking notes, but you're not taking notes. Are you going to be able to remember all this? Are you sure? I thought you were one of these Shruti Dara people. So you've been hearing, so what is ISKCON? Fob me off. Okay. That's a definition. Okay. Translated into Sanskrit, Krishnanu Chinta Janasanga Vrikshas. The unique tree of consciousness of Krishna, which grows all over the world. Not that you need to know that, it's just a little thing to maybe stimulate me, but what is ISKCON, Parampadam? Put your hand up if you're a member of ISKCON. Put your hand up if you're a member of ISKCON. Boy, have we got problems. Sheena, you're not a member of ISKCON.
I don't know in terms of what the definition of a member.
So you're going to wait till we get the definition and you say we're not. Sharanagati, are you a member of ISKCON?
Yeah.
That's a yeah, kind of. But only because you put me on the spot and asked me. Alakananda, are you a member of ISKCON?
I'm not sure.
What have they been teaching you, all these other teachers? Yes, unless you have the definition of what ISKCON is, you may not be able to say whether you are a member or not. Particularly if being a member means that you have to sacrifice something that you're not prepared to sacrifice. Particularly if being a member of ISKCON means saying yes to some institutional policies that you don't feel comfortable with. My definition of ISKCON, I suppose, is perhaps easier for me, because when I joined ISKCON, it was very small, struggling, and it was definitely Prabhupada's society, in the sense that Prabhupada wrote the books, we distributed them, we came back, and occasionally Prabhupada would come and he would look at us and he would say, thank you. And I thought, ISKCON is Prabhupada's organization, ISKCON and Prabhupada are non-different. What ISKCON is just us distributing Prabhupada's books and looking after his temples. There was never any question, am I in or am I out? Firstly, because in those days, if you lived in the temple, all the temples were obviously ISKCON temples, and nobody really lived outside a temple. So outside the temple was outside ISKCON. Inside the temple was inside ISKCON. So it was a very easy definition. And then we went and spoiled everything. We distributed 300, 400 million books around the world. And people spoiled it all by reading them. I mean, how unthoughtful. They read them, and they started practicing Krishna consciousness at home. And they didn't join the temple. And it spoiled Prabhupada's movement completely. Or did it? What do we think Prabhupada wanted to achieve when he said, take Krishna consciousness to every town and village? Do we think that Prabhupada meant that there was going to be a chateau in every town and village? Something this size? A Bhaktivedanta manor? Maybe the Beatles would give us enough houses for every town and village? Is that what he wanted? Well, he certainly wanted it, but he didn't get it. People don't have that much money. And certainly when the Krishna consciousness movement got to Russia, then we found a situation where people couldn't have temples, but they could have places where they met. Now put your hand up if you're a member of the Hare Krishna movement. That was a little bit easier. Parampadam, still had to think about it. Okay. So, dear boys and girls, what's going on here? Is there a difference between ISKCON and the Hare Krishna movement? Sometimes people try to point that out. They think that there is. I saw a letter a couple of days ago from someone who said, when he was asked for his definition of ISKCON, he said, well, ISKCON is the legal entity. And I thought to myself, I know what he means, and it sounds right, but it doesn't feel right, because nobody told me that ISKCON was a legal entity. It is. But that's like saying, Ram here is American. It's true. Canadian? American? Okay. It's American. And when he goes to the border, he will present an American passport. And if someone says, are you an American? He will say yes. That's his legal identity. That's okay. He knows that he's Aham Brahmasmi. He knows that he's a disciple of such and such. He knows so many things about him. But this man on the border of the country that he's visiting is not interested in him as a spiritual being or him as a bundle of political... He's just, where are you from, son? Show me your passport. It's not untrue that he's an American, but it's only very, very low down on the hierarchy of truths. There's a hierarchy of truths about us. And the topmost truth on the hierarchy of truths is that we are eternally Krishna Das. Das, 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 Anu Das. That's the, you know, and therefore Lord Chaitanya says that I'm not Kiba Vipra Kiba Nyasi Shudra Kene Nai Krishna Tattva Se Guru. No, that's the wrong one. That's the one I want. Yeah. Speak it, speak it. I have short circuits in my brain sometimes. I'm not a vipra. I'm not a sannyasi. I'm an eternal servant of the servant of the servant of the gopis of Vrindavan. But if Ram here says that on the border, he's going to have problems. In fact, some of our devotees, in order to appear insane, have said the same thing. There was one devotee who did not want to join the army of his particular country. And they said, name? And he said, Jiva. He said, where are you from? Vaikuntha. And he said, no. He said, take me. And he said, religion? He said, I believe that God is half man, half lion. And every morning he would get up and he would chant japa very loudly. And eventually they said, we don't want you in the military. You can go home. It's okay. So my eternal identity and my social, political identity, it's all right. So when we say that ISKCON is a legal institution registered in, you know, Mayapur, governed by the GBC, blah, 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 blah. That's on a hierarchy of definitions. It is true, and Prabhupada was very insistent that that part was true, and he wanted a movement, not a movement that moves so much that you can't see whether it's a movement. A jellyfish is a movement, but it doesn't have a great backbone. You know, if you have... I mean, they're not bad, actually, for systems and structures, but they just kind of, you know, have this sort of... They just do a couple of things. They don't do a great deal. If you want to create a movement that does more than just, you know, that, and sting people occasionally, then it has to have systems, and it has to have structures, and it has to have, you know, it has to have a political identity, a legal identity in the world. Why? Because it's interacting with the world. If you don't want a movement of preachers, but you want a movement of practitioners, it's fine. There's the forest. Go. There's the mountain. There you go. There's the beach. It's like my wife. My wife just, you know, she had heard when she was 18, she'd heard that Bhaktivedanta Swami lived in India. So she'd got a book. So she didn't want to join ISKCON, she wanted to go and see Prabhupada. Chiefly because she was living in Canada, and in Canada at that time they were going out in 10 degrees below freezing and doing books. And she said, that's, you know, I don't really want to join that. That's his movement, but I want to join him. So she went all the way to India, to the Radha Damodara temple. Anyway, on the way, and she went overland from Amsterdam on a bus through Turkey and in Iraq and Iran and all these places. So, but on the way, she stopped off in Greece, and she was living in a cave. She was living in a cave. Why? Because that's what you do in spiritual life. You just, you know, you just spiritual, isn't it? You know? So Prabhupada didn't come to create just people who would do that. He came to create a movement of people who, you know, we live in cities so that we can preach to people in cities. So it's a mission. It's a mission of preachers. Anyway, she didn't eventually meet Prabhupada because nobody told her that, and somehow she didn't get the message that they'd moved up the road to the Krishna Balaram temple, that it just opened. So she never got to see him. But when we say ISKCON, we're saying the organization which is there to accomplish the preaching mission of Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Now, I've had arguments with sannyasis over this, because, well, just one sannyasi in particular, a long time ago. And he said, no, ISKCON is only the people who live in temples. This was 20 years ago. Nobody can say that now, but back then he was saying it. And I said, people don't live in a temple? Are they not members of ISKCON? No, he said, they're life members, like that. And I said, well, life members of what? He said, ISKCON. I said, so they are members of ISKCON. And he said, well, you know what I mean. They're life members. We are the members, they are the life members. I said, but we're all members. We're just different types of members, right? He said, yeah, but that's... Anyway, Prabhupada didn't... You know, and then he tried to out-Prabhupada me, which sometimes people do. Prabhupada didn't want this. Prabhupada said... As soon as someone raises their voice and says, Prabhupada said, what it really means is, I said. They're just trying to get a quote from Prabhupada and bash you over the head with it. Prabhupada wouldn't want you. Prabhupada wouldn't want you to say that. Prabhupada would say what I'm saying to you. Goes on all the time. So when we say the word congregation, we mean people who are coming together for the purposes of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's purpose in this world. And that is that people come together, and I'm going to give a talk on this. Tomorrow Lakshmi Moni is giving class, and then the day after I will give class. And it's a perfect verse, because it mentions the word congregation. Sanat Kumar says, when in the congregation of devotees, there is perfect questions, something like that. When there's perfect questions and there's answers and there's glorification of the Supreme Personality of Godhead and conclusive discussion, something like that. Then, I forget what it is, but he said, then this is, you know, real advancement takes place. This is basically saying this is where it's really happening. So he's mentioned the word congregation, and he's also mentioning what people, when they congregate, should do. And it's very simple. They talk about Krishna's name, form, qualities, character, pastimes, like that. And then they also talk about Krishna's devotees. They talk about the devotees' successes. They talk about the devotees' struggles. And they talk about the devotees and their ability to change the lives of others. And if you look in the Bhagavatam, and if you look in the Chaitanya Charitamrita, you find all the way through, that's what it is. It's talking about Krishna's Nama, Rupa, Guna, Leela, and it's talking about the Vaishnavas. And it's talking about their failures as well, but how they succeeded after the failure, and how glorious that was. So when they come together, that's congregation. So I say, and this is my definition, and I'm giving the talk, so it must be right, that wherever people are coming together under the auspices of His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada, using His books and teachings as their focal point of discussion, and actually glorifying Krishna, discussing Krishna, enthusing and enlivening each other, then this is congregation, and this is ISKCON. What does Krishna say? I'm not present in the heart of the yogis. I'm there when the devotees are glorifying me. I'm there. I'm right there. So because Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is Krishna, and therefore Krishna's purpose for Kali Yuga is to spread the congregational chanting of Krishna's names, as Krishna as a devotee, spreading the chanting of his own names, then what happens is that Krishna says that he's there. And I say under the auspices of Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada's teaching, because I started one particular group in one town, and within a few weeks they were on to other books, you know, Tibetan Book of the Dead, and you know, various other books. And so then I had to change it, and I said, here's the rules, and if you like them, you know, that's good, and we're going to be friends, but if you're not going to do it, then I, you know, it's not the purpose for which I came and started this group. So since that time, I have a list of things that people must do if the group is to meet under ISKCON's auspices. And the first and foremost is that you've got to do these things, and we'll be discussing these things. But it's mainly, it's Prabhupada's books, you know. And so, I want to ask you now about your favorite subject, how I came to Krishna consciousness. Now, last year, I was going around the room, and someone said, my mum and dad. Someone else said, well, it was my mum and dad. And someone else said, it was my mum and dad. Does anyone have a story of how they came to Krishna consciousness that's got nothing to do with your mum and dad? Elena. Alakananda. You kick off first. How did you come to Krishna consciousness? How did you come to be sitting there in a sari, tilak, neck beads?
Short version.
Keep everybody stimulated. This is the point where they've been listening to me now for a good hour. And we're going to have a break very soon. And then, we're going to have a break. We're going to have a 5-minute break soon. So. 5-minute break, 15-minute break, actually. We finish at 12:30, right?
10-minute.
10-minute break we have. Oh, okay. Go for it. How I came to Krishna consciousness by Elena. Kukin.
So when I had this friend, she was devotee, she took me to Amma.
Amma?
Amma.
The hugging?
Yeah.
The hugging lady.
At that time I was into, like, I don't know, every day was, okay, it was different, and I didn't like so much the hugging thing, but I was, okay.
Were you hugged?
Yeah,
by Amma?
Yeah.
Then by Amma's mercy you're sitting here?
Well, no, but there were some devotees there. So they had books, and I was thinking, okay, you know, I don't really want to buy the book because probably it's very expensive. And then the next day I went to this second-hand bookstore because at the time I bought everything second-hand. And the devotees, like, I talked with one Prabhu there a lot, and he didn't really preach to me as well, but he just showed me a little bit, like, the things, what I'm doing, it's also Krishna consciousness. And so I wanted to read about Bhagavad Gita, but then I found about Bhagavad Gita in the second-hand bookstore, but it was not that Prabhupada, and it wasn't so attractive. Too expensive still. I don't like it so much. And then I found Perfect Answers, Perfect Questions. which was also a problem that I didn't know that. So I left the Gita and I thought that was nothing. Oh, well, I'll take this one instead, which looks interesting. It's more interesting about the Gita. I read that and I was thinking, wow, it's really nice. And it turned out to also be useful. It was also a problem. And then I went on the internet and found the Chopati site and I listened to the whole series of lectures about science of self-realization. And that was it. I thought, okay, that's what I want to do.
How about a round of applause? What a story! Now, how is it that you Googled Hare Krishna and you didn't get through to, some anti-ISKCON site? I think so. I think so. Yes. Who else has come to Krishna consciousness in an interesting way?
My parents are devotees, but the way I became serious is kind of interesting.
Yeah, that's right. Tell that, because, you know, it doesn't mean just because your parents are devotees that you get to be a devotee. So what's your story?
I mainly grew up in going to karmic schools. I never went to gurukul. And going to karmic schools, basically, I was just a vegetarian karmi. Although I still knew about, you know, chanting Hare Krishna and we had the Gita and the Bhagavatam at our house. But, of course, I never took it seriously. And my father, he was working at that time, and he didn't spend so much time at home, so he never taught us too much about it. And my mother, she's just, you know, wasn't so much serious either. But then one day, my dad, he lost his job. Somehow he got into a car crash, and then they lost that. And then he started going to the temple more. He was a very serious devotee before. And then, because he was always working, I liked to be with him, I liked to associate with him, so I would go with him to the temple. Not because I liked going to the temple, but because I liked to go with him. And just to hang out with him. And actually, my whole life, I never tasted a gulab jamun. Because we would go to the Sunday feast, and I would look at these brown balls floating in this weird water. I'm not going to taste that. So I never tried a gulab jamun until this was when I was like 13 years old. But going to the temple every single night, we would see the Mahaprasadam on the table, and there would be gulab jamuns there. And after a few weeks, I was looking at these things every night, and I was, well, I mean, I've never tried them before, so maybe I should just try it once. And there was one gulab jamun left. I took it up. And it was the best tasting thing I've ever had in my life. It was so good. It was like, oh my God, I can't believe I wasted so many years of my life. I've never tasted a gulab jamun. And I ate it again. And it was so good that I started going every single night just to get the Mahaprasadam, just to get those gulab jamuns. But actually, I've never had a gulab jamun as good as that since before. It was so good. It was infused with some kind of shakti. And just by eating that gulab jamun, I started going to the temple regularly, every single night. Prasad was so good. I liked the puris and the sabji. And then my dad was going to lunch every day with chapatis. They had chapatis rice. That's all I was interested in, the prasad. So then I went and I started getting some lunch prasad, and that was really good. I was amazed. And chapatis and dal was so good. And then I remember the first time I went to the morning program, because my dad was going to the morning program, and I was just going because I figured I'd see it once in my life. I'd like to go to the morning program. And I remember this one devotee, Adidev Prabhu. He's a senior devotee. He's a good kirtan leader. He was leading Guru Puja. I was coming from the front, and he was singing towards Srila Prabhupada's Vyasa-san. He was chanting, and all the devotees in the temple room were dancing. And I was like, mystical. And I walked in the temple room and was looking around. Everybody's dancing. Everybody's happy. And then I became attracted to that. Started going to that. And then my dad was going to Mangal Arati every day, so I wanted to go with him because I didn't like taking the bus to school. So after japa period, he would drive me to school and then do something. So then I started going to Mangal Arati with him, and then after Mangal Arati, I'd go sleep in the car. And then gradually I started chanting one round after Mangal Arati, just, you know, getting into it. Then two rounds and four rounds, and then I started reading the Bhagavad Gita, and then I got sick of going on the computer playing video games all the time. Then I next then? I guess like these karmic kids at school, they're such, you know, low lives. So it's just so gradual, the way I can see it. Like, and
that's a very interesting story, actually. Very interesting. I wonder if your dad had done it the other way around, if your mum had done it the other way around, if they'd sent you to a gurukul, and then you'd got to 13, and it would have been, oh, what is this white powder? I never had this before in my life. Oh, wow, drugs. Because that's the way it often goes with kids who go to it seems that your mum and dad don't want you to do, that's what you do. So your dad seemed to have the right technique there. Very interesting. Any other interesting story? No, okay. Well, we'll take a little break. And could you come back then at 12 o'clock? Thank you so much. That's the hardest I'm going to make you work, okay? It gets more exciting after this. Yeah, we've got slideshows, we've got songs, we've got dances, we've got mystical stones, all sorts of things. Thank you very much. Hare Krishna.